Harihi Om. Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 2 Adi Karna 1 Description of the form of Bhagavan, page 43. So continuing with Shankara's ideas. According to Advaitavadis, there are three levels of existence. One, Paramartha or ultimate reality, Vyavaharika or empirical existence, and Pratibhashika or illusory existence. Brahman is of the first kind, the empirical world of space and time, the second, and imagined objects like snake and rope represents the third type. Illusory existence is, I guess, not universal. It is occasional and has no practical efficiency. This existence ceases when the truth of the underlying substratum is known. Empirical existence ceases when its underlying substratum, Brahman, is known. Empirical existence is of a higher order of reality than illusory existence. Right? So they're taking it that you have where people are in Maya, then you have the people where they understand they're not the body, they understand the metaphysics and what's happening. That's the second level, and then there's the understanding of Brahman. So, you know, basically you can say is these are correct positions. The difficulty comes up is that they don't know the actual nature of Brahman, and they don't know the actual nature of these other two. Right, so they have a general understanding, because as it said, you get a vague understanding of the absolute by Brahman. You can't actually get a complete understanding unless you understand Parabrahman. So they're unable to do that, so that's where the problem comes. And if they were just working on this, and they were taking it that there's Brahman and Krishna's Brahman and this, but they're only interested in Brahman, you know, like the so that aspect, then they, you know, they would be situated spiritually, and there wouldn't be really a problem other than they could go farther. Their realization is not that complete. But the difficulty comes is that they bring the form of the Lord into the material realm and say that he's made of Maya and the spiritual world doesn't exist. That's then where they become offensive. And that's where then their whole philosophy falls apart, because without these two aspects, they can't actually fully understand these others. Because they'll say it's an illusion, but it's an illusion within an illusion. Right? You're an illusion, but what your illusion about also doesn't exist according to them. So then what's the point? You know? So then the second state, the empirical existence, they understand basically who they are and this and that in their context of Brahman. But at the same time, it's still an illusory position. So how is that better? You know, other than it's a single illusion rather than a double illusion. You know? But it's not actually very well defined, right? The Advaitavadi's view on Ishvara. This is all vritti. When we view the world from samsara, we need an explanation for it. The changeless Brahman cannot be the cause of the changing world, right? Because there are points of cause and effect. Then the point is you have you see the effect, it means the cause in the effect, right? So if the material world is changing, Brahman's unchanging, so Brahman can't be the source. It has to be something that's changing. Same time as since it's changing and it's illusory, then what it's coming from also has to be changing and illusory. Right? But the problem is where does this changing and illusory come from? That they can't explain. That's the difficulty. But if it never ceases to be itself, the world cannot be explained. I guess this is that it means must be Brahman.
Yes.
Right? So the point is it has to be somehow or another connected to Brahman, because everything's Brahman, but at the same time as they have a problem. So the only solution is a saguna, or changing Brahman, right? Because they want this changing world, so they have to have Brahman that's changing. But the point is as soon as it's changing, then what's the point? If it's changing, we're changing, the material world's changing, so then what's the benefit there? Right? So the only solution is saguna, or changing Brahman, and Ishwara, who combines within himself the natures of both being and becoming. Ishwara is the principle of being in the universe, binding all things to each other and binding them to himself. Right? So they're going to accept that within the cosmos, that Ishwara is going to be the supreme entity. So that much they get. But the problem comes is then, because the Shastras say and all that, it's hard to avoid that. But the difficulty comes up is then they'll say that this Ishwara is material, right? Mode of goodness, you know, it's better than everybody else, but... Yeah. Ishwara is a combination of Brahman and Prakriti. He is a self-conscious personality by whose power Prakriti develops the whole world. Quote, he designed, all be many, all procreate. He designed or he deigned?
He desired it. He desired it.
Desired.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That'll work also. When the world objects are created, Brahman, who is essentially knowledge, becomes the knower, subject. Right? So that's the thing, is that Brahman, in his state, even though his knowledge, can't know anything. Because to know something, that means there has to be an object that knowledge is directed towards. Does that make sense? So, therefore, then Brahman can't be involved. So there must be a form of Brahman that is. But they can't accept that this form is transcendental. That's where the Maya comes in. Right? Ishwara is all-comprehensive and contains within himself all that exists, potentially in pralaya and actually in creation. He is both the material and efficient cause of the world. Right. So we'll see is at this point we'll say that it's saying the same thing. Right? But the problem comes is at the end, then it goes weird. Right? Maya is the energy of Ishwara, by which he transforms the potential into the actual world. Right? Where the potential comes from, that's another thing. Maya is the causal body of Ishwara, through which he imposes names and forms on the formless during creation. Right? So now he's imposing on Brahman. So that means Brahman is being transformed. So you see, is you just get all these contradictions in what they're saying. One thing will be logical, the next thing won't be. So they'll take the Vedic statements, that'll be logical, but then when they try to put it into the form of their application, that's where it doesn't work. Maya, the material substratum in the creation of the world, which possesses the three gunas, can neither be described as the self of Ishwara or different from it. Right? So you're getting these things. They just, yeah. It is avidya caused by Maya, which deludes the jiva into the false belief of plurality. So, yeah. While Brahman associated with Maya is Ishwara, when it's associated with avidya, it is the jiva. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But then the problem is where does this Maya come from? It'll come from the jiva. So that's the thing is there. It's how you say their philosophy. You could say, sad to say, is like English grammar. Is that each particle of speech is defined by the other particle of speech? You can't define them separately. And so as soon as you move into one, then the other one doesn't necessarily make sense. It's not well thought out, let's say. They think a lot, but that doesn't mean that they did a good job.
Maharaj, earlier we saw that Brahman when associated with Vidya becomes Ishwara, and now they say Brahman associated with Maya is Ishwara. So can we then equate that Maya is Vidya, according to them?
Maya is?
Vidya, according to them.
I'm not sure if they're going to go so nicely with Maya as Vidya. You guys concerned? No, it's just, I think that they take Vidya and Avidya as their own things, and then you have Maya, the illusion. But, you know.
It's written while Brahman associated with Maya is Ishvara.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it? I think it's a mistake. Typing?
No. This is Mayavad philosophy. This is not our philosophy. Since Ishvara is always aware of his oneness with Brahman, he enjoys eternal bliss. But the jiva deluded by avidya is caught in samsara. Right? So you can see here is that now if you come to that second stage, because there's the third stage is Brahman, exclusively. The second stage, then this empirical position, then you're above the illusion. Right? And so here it says, since Ishvara is always aware of his oneness with Brahman, he enjoys eternal bliss. But the jiva deluded by avidya is caught in samsara, right? So those are those two positions, then there's Brahman. So that means if the jiva becomes aware of his position, goes away from avidya, then comes into vidya, then he's on the same platform as Ishvara. Right? So it's convenient for them. But as we pointed out yesterday, is when you have vidya, you get one, and when you have avidya, you get the other. So does that mean, how does he go from jiva to Ishvara? But the common point is Brahman. So that means he would have to go from jiva back to Brahman, then come out again as Ishvara. Right. So, yeah.
In their philosophy, jiva is first.
In that one previous discussion that we were having before, then the jiva was first, because the point is jiva is an illusion. Now you need some place for him to manifest this illusion, so the material world. So then there's the element of this empirical existence. So that's knowledge. So somehow or another coming because of the jiva, but then when Brahman accepts that, then he becomes Ishvara, and then controlling Maya, then he creates the world and all that. You see, it gets really, really complicated. It doesn't make sense. It's just easy. If you take Ishvara as a transcendental and above Brahman, and it's his desire, all the things that this, all the basic things they're saying works. The whole thing works. But because they're committed to the idea that this supreme has to be formless and changeless. So they can't have a person above that. So then that's why it said exclusive oneness. We also accept the oneness aspect and that there's the difference, and they both go on simultaneously. But the exclusive monist, no, it's there is no personal aspect, and any personal must be maintained, mundane. So they're taking what's transcendental and dropping it below, but they're putting it above our position. But at the same time, as once you come in knowledge, they put themselves on the same position as Ishvara. Right? So it's just another way of, a tricky way of becoming God. Right? It didn't work through karma, and so then you become renounced and all that, but that's pretty dry. So now, by this, you can become God. Okay, Ishvara is the highest product of man's intelligence, right? So that's what we're saying. So it's come from the jiva. So technically speaking, that puts the jiva above Ishvara. And so if that's the case, why would you want to be Ishvara if the jiva is already superior? Yeah. It is the most that our finite minds can grasp of the indeterminate Brahman, and thus the unconditioned consciousness becomes conditioned. The Ishvara is Brahman reflected in or conditioned by Maya. It is the personal aspect of the impersonal Brahman. Right? So it's just a funny myth. When you look at it technically, it doesn't make sense. And then, but the point is, we can say, why would they accept this? Because they want to. That's the basic thing. They want to. They want to be God. They want to not surrender to the Lord. So that's the basic point, is the living entities in the material world don't want to surrender to the Lord. Right? So they'll only surrender as much as they get the benefit of whatever it is that they're looking for. Right? And as soon as it's more than that, then that's when that, you know, they draw the line. Right? Yes.
So this is the explanation of Shankara's followers, successors.
Shankara will give that this direction, but at the same time, as you see, he also explains about the Supreme Lord. So if someone really was serious, they would catch that and then try to inquire about those aspects. But because it's about bewildering atheists, then the difficulty comes up is they prefer the atheistic view. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. Do we sit around wondering why the materialists are so materialistic and why they're so foolish and they don't see this and that? Do we sit around discussing that?
No point in.
Huh?
No point in.
Yeah, so it's the same with these guys. So the point is you point out the actual reality, and then the chit potency being there, if they appreciate it, then they'll come step forward into Krishna consciousness. And if they don't, you know, what can you do? It's just different modes are binding them, that's all, the different combination. But we always have to remember, because you can say, well, they're in goodness, but they have to remember, material goodness is material. And the avidya shakti is actually a spiritual shakti. Vidya shakti and avidya, they're both Krishna's spiritual shaktis. Right? So the jiva is under that avidya shakti. Being under that, they're placed in the material world. Being in the material world, then they're placed under the three modes. So when we say the living entity is ignorance, then there is the aspect of the mode of ignorance, but the real problem is the avidya that's before that. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why I'll say is there's the avidya that's before, that by Brahman being covered by avidya, you get the jiva, but at the same time as then they have this avidya of the lower reality. What did they call that? Pratibhashika, right? The illusory existence. Then there's that one of that ignorance. So they're not really distinguishing between the mode of ignorance and avidya. That's why sometimes you can't tell is it maya or is it not? Is it, you know, who's controlling what? Because they just say something enough that you'll drop the subject. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, oh, where did we come from? If you say Brahman, no one asks another question. The conversation stops right there. And since it's a conversation that you basically won't understand anyway, then why continue the conversation? Now if we say Brahman, what do we think of? The impersonal Brahman. Right? But when we say Brahman, what is the actual... What does that mean?
Supreme Personality of God.
Yeah, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we've come from Krishna. Which aspect, which part, this and that, that's another thing. Right? Because as soon as we say, oh, we come from here, but then all this, that, we argue. As soon as you say Brahman, everybody just is quiet. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that people are looking for that point within their combination of modes on which they have no more questions. Right? People want to be satisfied. They want to be peaceful. Right? So they look for a philosophy that answers the question. But it opens more questions, but for their modes it works. In someone else's modes it doesn't. So that's why everybody has their own unique combination of avidya. That makes sense?
Chinese philosophy, same impersonal traditions in the form of Taoism, it's more, in philosophical part, it's more short. Can you say that Shankara gave so long explanation because he only wanted to defeat Buddhism?
Basically, it's because he wouldn't have been dealing, I don't think, with the Tao and all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. Right? So, the because they're getting more into the experiential aspect. the Chinese. You know, the experiential, the practical. You know. So their explanations are more on its application in your life here. Right? And so you're taking the second level of existence here, the empirical, and then explaining the third level. Like that. So they don't, because then in these, where they go, what's the ultimate, I have no idea. But in the Buddhists, it's just there's nothing. Right? So that nothingness there, that'll be that first level. So that's where you see we have the same thing as the Maya bodies are saying, the Buddhists are saying, and like this. So he's trying to get them to appreciate that what's above is something more within the context of the Vedic. But you can't get them completely there, right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. If you put it too much on their thing and not moving them too far, then it doesn't come out as good. Does that make sense? So you always have to be careful. In other words, we're thinking soft preaching is new. Shankaracharya, this is soft preaching.
Becomes some
messy
than before.
Yeah.
That's really soft.
But I mean, the point of where it's just about the person and taking them, you know, keeping them in the context of their environment, trying to adjust. You know, it's just like if we go to the yoga studio, we're going to teach them yoga, we're going to talk about yoga and all this. We would like to make them vegetarians, right? Like that. But if they don't go past vegetarian, they still don't chant or anything like that. We figure we've done something. So that's what Shankaracharya has done. Right? Does that make sense? So it means we're looking at the how you say, empirical existence of soft preaching. Not at the what do you call it, the emotional content of it. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because generally it's looked at that when you're too straight, that looking at it that it's rough. But people can be very straight and it's not rough. You know? They're just being straightforward. They're looking at, okay, you said this and this and this, but then according to that, wouldn't that be this? You know? And then they're just showing how it's absurd. And then you have to look at it and go, oh, okay. So actually, this whole point of hard to soft is based on an emotional experience. It's not actually based on actually how the preaching's working. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So one, you show your conviction. The other one, you try to hide it. Yeah. Yes.
I was reading this sentence, is trying to compare it with Brahma Samhita. It's like similar what they are saying.
Means that they're working from the Vedas, so a lot of things they say will be similar. But it doesn't mean it's the same as what we're saying. You know, it's just like, let's say, you have the anarchists. They'll say, you know, the intellectual is the topmost, and, you know, based on this and that, and, you know, you shouldn't control the intellectuals and all this kind of thing. The Vedic also says that, but the Vedic doesn't allow the intellectuals to destroy the rest of the culture like the anarchists will. So anything is there. Now, people growing up, getting educated, getting married, having children, you know, taking care of the children, getting them educated, getting them married, and then at some point in the life, you know, retiring a bit, like this. Is that not described in Varnashram? Right? But do they take it through to God consciousness? So basically everybody, the only thing that works is whatever is actually Vedic. That's what Veda means, knowledge. So people, they don't know it comes from the Veda, but anything that's actually practically working, that's Veda. And the part that's not working, that's what's not Veda. You know what I'm saying? Just like you have a vehicle and you go from point A to point B, and that works. That's the Vedic part. That is polluting, that's the non-Vedic part. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that if you look at it, ultimately everything's connected to Krishna. That's why you see that when Krishna's describing, and they describe the the Uttamadikaris in the, then the point is they see everything connected to Krishna because it is.
Samadarshina.
Yeah. They see everything connected to Krishna. That's the whole thing, is that there isn't something not connected to Krishna. But the problem is they don't get the complete understanding, so therefore it gets used in a strange way. You know, it's like 2 + 2 = 7. You know, that you have 2 + 2 = all those parts are things that we'll use, right? So that means you have 2 + 2 = then what is the result, right? So that's 5 parts. So 4 parts of it they have right. But the point is the 5th one's what's wrong. So generally speaking, we'll throw out all the parts and try to start again. So then now we have to have a new system, and that's not going to work because the actual thing is these 4 parts, and then you have to have the right answer. Right? Or they'll try to say, well, it's almost there, so it's basically as good as, so why be too fanatic and everything like that, and be accommodating and broad-minded like this. You know, so then that's the difficulty, is that, no, it's that part has to be changed. We can identify, this is correct, that's wrong, and so correct what's wrong. But the other is, it's all wrong, or it's all right. Does that make sense?
Would it be the part which is wrong, that they are trying to explain it from the empirical point of view?
That's always there. But why would they be using the empirical point of view?
Like here they say, Ishvara is the highest which can be understood by material, not their intellect.
Yeah.
Like that, for example.
But what they don't understand is it's Brahman, and that it's unchanging and eternal. That's as high as you can get with the empiric.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And because that's all the higher, they apply that to Bhagavan, to Ishwara, right? And so then applying that to Ishwara, then they have to bring it down below that within the modes.
Yeah, that's
yes, but what is that? That's not the basis. Okay. That's the mechanical mistake.
Okay.
What's the basis?
Deny the personality of God.
That's it. That's the point. So that's why they're Mayavadi.
They have to use these lower techniques. For this.
Yeah, because as it pointed out, that it was talking about the Varanasi Brahmins and then that group of Buddhists, right? But it mentioned they're both Mayavadis because they think the world's illusion and everything with form is illusion. So it's the same philosophy, just that Shankara developed it. It'll be more developed than what the Buddhists have. That's why he could defeat them. But it's otherwise, the basis is the same. Is that form? That there is no such thing as spiritual form and activity. So they're denying the personality of Godhead, they're denying the personality of the Jiva. So they're just impersonal. Right? And why? Because they're frustrated that they could not enjoy the material, control and enjoy the material world. Therefore, they went for this. The guy was so successful and everything was going fabulous, would he be a Mayavadi? You understand? That's the whole point. Is that they're frustrated. Now, whether they're frustrated that they couldn't get the facility, and so then they give it up like sour grapes, you know, that kind of thing, or they had the facility, they were pious enough to have the facility, and they saw it still doesn't satisfy them. You understand? But in any case, they're not satisfied. And they expect the material energy to make them satisfied. So they reject the whole concept. Rather than material energy will never make you satisfied, that's why there's spiritual nature. We're spiritual, but only the spiritual nature will make us satisfied. But they throw out everything with that. So that's why we say it's destructive, mode of ignorance. You just want to destroy. So they destroy their existence, everything else in the process. So the Mayavadis won't be as vicious as the Buddhists. But still, you know, because they try to function in goodness. Does that make sense?
So is that point of frustration that's like crucial point?
Yes, that's why it's raga, What is it? Raga? Bhaya Kroga. Right? So Raga is karma. I say Bhaya, that's the impersonalists. And Kroda, that's the Buddhists. So you see that in anything. First you go like this, then you become disillusioned, and then who am I in that? Then you become angry, and then want to destroy everything. It is a typical arc, you know. So that's just what people go, it's just the way it goes through. So there'll be small arcs like this that we may see in the lifetime of that or in a society. But then there's the big arc of just the jiva going through this. So thousands and thousands of lifetimes, there'll be a karmi, then they go on for the jnani, then that doesn't work, then they become angry and become a Buddhist. Because these things are eternal principles. Buddhism is not just right now, Buddhism always has been there. Right? It's just that when there's a certain time, it comes up.
So after the anger and the trying to destroy, then where does living need to go from that?
Back to karma, back to enjoying. You know, because you know when the anger gets over in that, then it's like then you get back to enjoying again. Because they throw out all these things and the control and the Supreme Lord and all that, then Prabhupada mentions that the impersonalists. All the Mayavadis, you know, so these both camps there, they give rise to sense gratification. Because it's not about taking the senses, controlling them, engaging in the Lord's service. It's just about you're either renouncing it or you're engaging in it. Because they're taking, I'm engaged in sense gratification, I reject that as the opposite. Then, so when they come back, it'll be back to here. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the thing. It has this bounce like that. While the Vedic is you're engaging the senses for sense gratification. Now you engage the senses in context with the Lord, right? By the regulations and that takes you up. So when you see a connection with the Lord, like the Vaishnavas, you can actually go up through the process. You don't have to come down. But when you go up through these other systems, these other, you know, in other words, the descending system will work. But this inductive systems, then it, you'll always be back where you started. Does that make sense? Yes.
So in terms of preaching, Maharaj, it sounds like we don't have to compromise. We just preach Vedanta, and then according to their own level of consciousness of modes of nature, people will pick their own level how much they want to absorb Vedic philosophy.
Yes. That's it. So we make it relevant for them so they catch some aspect of it.
Yeah.
And the natural thing is that by catching that, because it's real, means they've come in contact with a chit potency, then that means they may take it up more or they may not. So if they don't, you know, you see them around next lifetime. You know, Harinam's going to be their next life also. Right? But if not, then they might start to wonder what's going on, inquire more, think about it. So you see, is that some devotees are talking about that they came in contact, and then, you know, it was 10 years later before they actually moved into the temple. You know, so there's other things happening. So in their life, when things get bad, they start thinking back about that. And then slowly, they come in contact again, they go a little farther. You know, so you have that. You know, it's just like sometimes parents of devotees, you know, they don't chant, but, you know, they're favorable and it's nice and, you know, sometimes, you know, do something for the devotees or, you know, sometimes they'll come and chant, but it's not something they'll do as a sadhana. You know, and then from that they'll just keep moving forward. Does that make sense? Or you see some, as soon as they come in contact, bang, they just immediately. You know,
Yes. Maharaj, do they define Ishvara as the supreme controller or just like the concept of control, like an illusory controller?
It means it's the supreme controller within the material world that makes it illusory.
Okay.
So that's what doesn't make sense.
So Brahman becomes conditioned by Maya and becomes a fake controller.
No, it means they become the controller because Brahman's not a controller. Because control, in their philosophy, control is beyond. That's the spiritual platform.
Right.
So that you have knowledge, you're applying that on something, you're existing, you're creating, you know. Go ahead. What is that? He is both the material and efficient cause, you know, because then Maya is there as the material cause, and then he's the efficient, he makes it happen. So that's the point, is they attribute all the things that would be properly explained in the philosophy, in right. the Upanishads, but they misapply it, that all this happens below Brahman, rather than this is happening above Brahman.
And how do they think that makes sense? Do they actually think that makes sense? Or
they do, because of the combination of the Ajnana Shakti and the mode of ignorance, then it works wonders.
Okay.
You know, it's just, that's the thing, is that when we're looking at it logically, it doesn't make sense. It's just like if we look at the karmas, we don't have to discuss it so long.
Sure.
We understand it much quicker. But the difference is because we're more have a background of karma,
yeah.
then we'll let that one kind of go.
You're right.
You know, and so therefore it becomes very obvious that this yon side, when it's misdirected, is really stupid.
Well, especially since they're, you know, known as logicians. So when
that's the thing, is they claim themselves.
Illogical.
Yeah, they claim themselves. But then you have the group of but they're following Vedas. But the rationalists, and they'll think that it's just their intelligence and they understand everything, and
right.
they're giving you all these modern things that religion is not giving you and all that. And, but the problem is they only apply it to what's good from their rationale.
Sure.
You know, that the technology, you know, you have all that, that's not coming from religion and all this and that. At the same time, what about all the pollution? What about, you know, all these kind of things, you know? I mean, does that make sense? You know, what is it? It's a megacity one. You know, all this is coming from them, the rationalists. You know, that's how they'll just kind of let go.
Mistakes were made.
Yeah, yeah. And so now we're figuring it out. And you know, like that. Yes.
The main reason why people become blind personally is not the fear. Fear is because they afraid to be a person and to see God as person, because they afraid to be by His control. Means that they should reject concept of control in Brahman.
Yes, well, they want to see, the living entity wants to get rid of all control. Right? Because that's the whole point. I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. But, you know, if you're a little bit aware, you'll notice that we're not actually in control. The common person knows we're not, but it's a background thing. You know, you got to get this permission, that you can't, you got to follow these laws. But so then the younger people, they're looking at it, why do we have to be controlled? And then they start all this revolutionary kind of stuff, right? But, you know, as they grow up and that and get attached, then they have to get a job and that, and then they fall into the same kind of illusion. It falls into the background, right? But the jnani keeps it in the foreground. But the difference is they avoid getting involved in it. Not that they're not on a smaller level, but they avoid, they're more renounced and detached. Right, so they don't get involved in the karma and all these kind of things. So they're not trying to improve the material situation. So they're just rejecting it. But they still, you know, so in that way you're getting rid of all this control of that. So then, but the problem is they're still controlled. So their idea is no, but all this control is coming from the mundane. So get rid of that, then I'll be free. Right? Then I'll be on the transcendental platform, so I'll be free of all this control. And being freed from the control, then I'll be happy. All right.
Then Brahman is not controller of...
No. That's Ishwar. But they, since they want to be the controller, they don't mind Ishwara, because they can be Ishwara. You know, you don't mind some big dude as long as you can be the big dude also. Is that something? Yeah.
It's the same desire to be controlled.
Yeah, it's still the controller, just that they it's just various ways to manifest it. So they're afraid of that relationship with the Lord. So that's the thing, the devotees aren't, they surrender.
If they just want to be Ishvara, why they created this concept of Brahman which fully...
Because the Shastra is describing Brahman. You know, because Brahman is a reality. So they're not creating that. That's already there. It's just in scriptures. Because in Buddhism, there is no Brahman. It's just emptiness.
They put Brahman on the highest level than Ishvara.
Yes.
For them, more naturally to put Ishvara on the highest level, but
No. Because the point is, Brahman is the highest because it says it's the, you know, you're trying to get to that platform of Brahman. But what they're not understanding is that's the they're putting it as the empirical existence. But it's that's the level that that the soul is functioning at. That's just where they exist. Then what they do as a soul, that's then the transcendental. They don't know about that because it's form.
The supreme goal to become Ishvara.
No, the supreme goal is to merge in Brahman. And since we have to be here, we might as well be Ishvara while we're here.
Philosophically, they want to become Brahman.
Yes.
But psychologically, they want to become Ishvara.
Yes. How you say? Rat deka kolabecha. See the Roth and sell bananas. That makes sense. Yeah, so that's the thing, is you have the logical aspect and you have their actual, you know, emotional content. So the point is that the subjectivity is why anybody functions. You know? I mean, of course, the intellectuals always try to say that they're not being subjective. But the point is they're just as subjective as anybody else. Just it's, you know, just like, let's say, I have a fresh medjuli date and I have one that's been sitting around for the last 6 months. You know, it's nice, shriveled up and dry. It's still a date. It's just a dry date, that's all. Yeah, so it's like that. You have the medjuli date and then you have the local Bengali date. You know, it's nothing there, no juice. It's still a date, but they're trying to claim, no, we're not a date. And on one level, you can look at it, so yeah, you're not a date. But it doesn't mean that they're not. They're still subjective. You can't not be subjective. So the actual, because personal means subjective, so actual objectivity is bringing your subjectivity in line with the Lord's subjectivity. That's the actual objectivity. But, you know, they'll come up with their own definitions. Like the Mayavadis do. They just come, they have an idea, and then they just do that. Even though if you look at it, it's very obvious that they're totally subjective. Right? But they don't buy it. They're so fixed. The modes are there. They're just so fixed, they can't see it. That's the thing. They're just an illusion. They cannot see. Right? You know, just like the kid. He can't understand why he can't have a cookie. It's just because of attachment. You can't see.
Nowadays, we can see that many people attracted by Buddhism or impersonalism say how to improve your material position by karma.
Yeah.
And many of them don't understand neither Buddhism philosophy nor Vedanta philosophy, I mean personal philosophy. Oh. Does it mean that nowadays you can directly teach Krishna consciousness without this medium state as Buddhism? I mean to those who are attracted by Buddhism, we can directly preach Krishna consciousness without impersonal concept of Shankara.
Yeah, you don't need anything. Because the point is that when they say they're Buddhist, what does that mean?
They don't believe in the Vedas at all.
Yeah, no, but not that. We're talking about this modern. The modern one. In the modern, they just think that you do a little meditation. Try to be peaceful, try to be nice, do a little meditation. And that's it. Is there something more?
Maybe vegetarian.
Maybe vegetarian.
Ethical.
Sorry?
Ethical.
Yeah, but ethical means, how do you define ethical? The guys in the corporate community, how do you define ethical?
Work ethics. According to their concept, ethical.
Yes, so the whole point is that they're only adding this, they're only adding Buddhism, to their karma. So it's not that they're giving up karma and taking that up. They're not becoming monks. Right? All it is they're adding, just like in religion, they're generally adding some religion to their karma. So religion, philosophy are just angas of their karma. It just means the karma's not going well, working in the corporate world, you know, doing the whole thing, going for it, really professional, doing really well, but you know, you have a total meltdown. So now what to do? So, you know, you need something like this, so therefore the Buddhism offers some little peace, or the yoga adds a little peace, or something adds some peacefulness to your life, and now you can go back and, you know, you're more careful now, you're not as crazy about it. But, you know, instead of working at, whatever it is, 100%, now you work at 90%. You know, because, you know, okay, you know, instead of making, you know, $500,000, you make, you know, $450,000, you know, $400,000, you're okay. It's fine. You know, you can live with that. You know what I'm saying? So they're just adding a little bit to what's there. So Krishna consciousness is enough. It means in our philosophy deals with all of this. So therefore, as you're dealing with the individual, if they do know a little bit of something here and there, or whatever comes up, whatever school it's from, that's then you deal with that. It's not that you have to do a whole thing on Buddhism, because in talking to them, what do they know about Buddhism? You know? But they don't. They're not sitting there staring at a wall for 7 hours. They're not doing that. And those guys do it every day, 7 hours, every day. You know, so they're not doing that. You know, it's 20 minutes here and there. You know, they'll try to make it regular and like that, but now and again if something comes up, then they won't. Does that make sense? So that's all. Yes. Okay. It is avidya caused by Maya which deludes the jiva into false belief of plurality. Right? Because there's false belief, because they're saying it's all one. There isn't this dual. While Brahman associated with Maya is Ishwara. When it is associated with avidya is the jiva, right? So there must be some aspect of vidya there. Since Ishwara is always aware of the oneness with Brahman, he enjoys eternal bliss, right? So that means they themselves, as practitioners of the Shankara philosophy, they're always aware of the oneness with Brahman. Just being aware that it's all Brahman, then supposedly they enjoy the eternal bliss and they're on that platform of Ishwara. You know, they may not be exactly doing, but many of them, they think, yes, I am controlling all this. They literally think. It's kind of like really stupid, but they really think. But the jiva deluded by avidya is caught in samsara. While Brahman is the indeterminate, nirguna, Ishwara, the personal God, is the determinate, saguna. Ishwara is the highest product of man's intelligence, right? So it's all coming from them. That's the whole point, is that since they're materialists, and you have to bring it in context that they'll understand, then you start off with them and bring it up only as high as they can go. Because how high can you go with the intelligence? How much transcendental can you appreciate? Right? Maximum is that there's an unlimited, changeless, entity. That's as far as you can get. So that's all that's been done. So, but it's based on them. It's not technically a descending process. Means he's brought in the descending that you have to hear from authority and parampara and all that, but he's still leaving it that the application of that, that inductive application of that, then that's all there is, and that's what makes it, gives it its authority. Right? Because they'll, yeah, somebody says. Yeah.
When they refer the Mayavadi sannyasis, each other as Narayan, they basically address, they think of this Ishwara, not Brahman.
No, because where is Ishwara? Where is Narayan? Is it in the first category or in the second?
According to them, it's second category.
So then when they're talking Narayan, that means it's second category.
Okay.
what they can't distinguish, that they can't understand, is in their first category, there's above that category. They can't distinguish that, so... It is the most that our finite minds can grasp of the indeterminate Brahman, and thus unconditioned consciousness becomes conditioned. Right? So they're saying that's as far as you can get, which the Shastras also say. Right? But at the same time, as they don't understand, is that understanding Ishwar on the transcendental platform is coming down through the chit potency by the Lord's blessings. So the Lord not being a person, transcendental person, there is no personal aspect to get to the transcendental personal platform. Right? Because Brahman is not interactive. So then, you know, Ishwar is, but why would Brahman, why would Brahman take this position and take the position of the jiva? If it's all illusion, then why we're going with it? Why we're rolling with it? You know. Ishwar is Brahman reflected in the condition or conditioned by Maya. So reflected in Maya or conditioned by Maya. It is the personal aspect of the impersonal Brahman. Right? So that's their approach. But you know, as we can see, it's always coming up. This doesn't make sense. Why would they do this? You know, that's the point. It doesn't make sense. That's the thing. Yes.
So I saw example why they do that.
Oh.
The Indian hairy dude, kind of dressed as a sadhu. So he's preaching like this.
Wait. Huh? Indian hairy guy dressed as a sadhu.
Yes.
But that's, isn't that, you're making one definition into two. Sadhu means hairy guy.
Okay. Sometimes they don't have such beautiful hair. Kind of.
That's because they're a new sadhu.
Okay.
New sadhu doesn't have much hair, and the old sadhus have lots of hair. Like that. You know, 12 years is considered, that's good hair.
So he's saying exactly as you mentioned that if you have any problems, just think of me. It's all me.
Yeah.
No, that's something like I couldn't believe this.
No. They're convinced, or at least they know. Even if they're not convinced, they're convinced that people are stupid.
Okay.
And that if you say these things and that they'll agree and you'll get facility. Like that. So what goes on means we don't see it. But what goes on in the whole Indian, you know, sadhu scene, it's insane. Because they take all these things and use it for their benefit. You know. Though Ishwar is only the highest approximation by man's intelligence of Brahman, still this empirical postulate has a practical utility. For only for the liberated soul, does Ishwar become unreal, right? So if you're conditioned, then Ishwar is real. But when you become liberated, their idea is then Ishwar is no more real because then there's only Brahman, right? So they're taking it as a step. If you're conditioned, then you can understand that there's Brahman, but you can come to the second platform. Then being situated there, then you start to situate yourself on the first platform, so the second one disappears. So you're on the third. When you come to the third disappears because it's illusion. When you come to the second disappears because it's also illusion. Yeah. Right, so you can see it's very close, but there's something wrong. You know, it's like milk with poison in it. You know, so it's very close, but it's a problem. For those caught up in samsara, Ishwar is the highest power and the object of devotion. Ishwar is Sat-Chit Ananda, knowledge, existence, and bliss. This is the distinction Shankara makes between God and the Absolute. Right. So this is how then they're making that position, and so then they get distracted. Right? So now.
So Maharaj, then they shouldn't object the Vaishnavas because.
No. They, on that platform, they're quite fine as long as you accept that Brahman is the highest. We were at a program in Bangkok, one of the temples there, and you know, a place fills up because it, you know, we come there, you know, nobody comes, you know, like that, like that. And then these, this, you know, big Mayavada, I forget who it was, may have been like Dayananda or something, one of those big guys in those days. He came, and the place was packed, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people. And because he saw us there, then he started talking about bhakti and this and that, because he knows we would have been talking that. You know, so he's talked that. I'm not even sure he didn't ask us to do a kirtan and things like this. Because they want, it's just like that Mayavadi in New York with Prabhupada. They get him to give, do kirtan and, you know, show the bhakti. That's fine, but just don't talk all this philosophy. You know? So they accept bhakti, like he says, for those caught up in samsara, Ishvara is the highest power and object devotion. So therefore, for those who are on that third level, then bhakti to Ishvara is actually, you know, is a very good process, like that. So, you know, so one can say, in doing this, then you have the aspect of, then they'll accept the bhakti. Because in India, basically, most people are impersonalists. But because of this process, they're not monks, they're not sannyasis, therefore they worship the Lord. But they can worship anybody, you know, just they like Ram or they like Krishna or they like whatever it is. And so then being in that position, then they'll move forward. But when you come to that position of realizing Ishvara and you're on that platform, then the illusory platform, then there's no need to worship Ishvara anymore because you become Ishvara. Right now you absorb yourself in Brahman, right? And so that's what they're taking. So they're taking it, I'm on the platform Ishvara, so they call each other Narayana, and then they're focusing on Brahman because that's what Ishvara is doing. But the only problem, the point is Ishvara is actually, you know, by their, even by their own definition, is controlling and doing everything because he is Brahman, what do you call it, covered by Jnana. So they have, in knowledge, have come to that platform, but they have to remember, as jivas, they are Brahman covered by avidya. But they're trying to equate themselves as the same. So even according to their own philosophy, they can't be Ishvara. There's still a difference, because they're not making the sun come up every day in the ocean, you know, like this. They're not. You know? So that's the difficulty, is that there's just so much false ego that they get overwhelmed by all this. So they don't mind us doing that, but they'll always say it's on a lower level. Like that. The bhakti is good? Yeah, because that's what people on the third level, it's a good thing because it's the easiest, because to try to follow their path is very difficult. So that's why they take it that those on their path, they're already on the second level. Right? You know, that's the thing. Yeah?
I'm just thinking, once we went to Kedarnath, and the Mayavadis, they greeted us and very friendly.
Mm.
And they offered them us some, you know, tea and some food.
Mm-hmm.
But then they also offered us hookah.
Mm.
And we rejected it. And they say, yes, very good. Householders, better not. But then they all smoke. Because it's a dharma of sannyasi. You know, you smoke, you get high, and then you see.
Yeah. You get higher, you get closer to the... To the
Brahman.
Yeah, so you can understand, you know, who the hippies were in their last life. Yeah. So they lost the philosophy and they lost the hookah, right? You know, okay. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura summarizes the various erroneous arguments put by Advaitavadis and causes behind them in Tattva Vivek as follows. Okay. According to the philosophy of Brahma Jnana, the world is a creation of ignorance. It is false. There is only one substance called Brahman. Belief in the reality of the world is illusion. Right? So it's false as Brahman. If you believe in it, that's illusion. The individual soul is Brahman covered by ignorance. By removal of ignorance, the soul becomes Brahman. At this time, there will be no lamentation, fear of illusion. This is called Advaitavada, monism, or pantheism. Right? Because it's also pantheism, because they can worship any god in their mind to get there. Because of that element of devotion to the second level. So they don't make any distinction between Vishnu and anybody else. They're all on that platform, though the form of Vishnu seems to be the one that's doing all the controlling and all that. But it doesn't mean that the position that they're in ultimately is any different. So that's why they have they're comfortable with the pantheistic point. And so then the Hindu, you know, kind of thing of, you know, everybody is, you know, everybody's on the altar. Yes.
So when Adi Shankara established Panchopasana, he put Ishvara on the level Manamaya and then Brahman of Anandamaya, is that right?
I'm not sure, but I mean Anandamaya would be Brahman, but whether Ishvara would be at Manamaya or Vijnanamaya.
Because usually Vijnanamaya, they put Shiva in there.
Oh, well, if they're doing like that, then depends on if they're Shaivites or whatever it is like that. Because ultimately, just depends upon the branch of it, whether Shakti's more prominent, whether Shiva's more prominent, or even if Vishnu's. It's just that it just depends. Because in Panchopasana, then, you know, it depends on who's you're following. But in their mind, ultimately it all goes, so it doesn't really matter. So that's why they don't get too much into it. Mm-hmm. You know. But it's because that's the thing, is all these elements are there, and then you put it together how you like, you know. So it's a fusion philosophy.
So they shift the positions.
They shift the positions, but in one particular group will be in one position, but you go to the next village and it's a different, you know, the next temple, you know. It's just like in Guru Vayur, their worship of the deity there. Then they're all impersonalists, but they, you know, they do all these nice devotional activities. But you go to other Shankara temples, and they don't have all that. Like you go to Kamakotipitam, and Devi's the deity, but you won't have all those nice things going on like that. In other ones, you'll have Shiva. You want to say something? Yes.
In the Shakti Pitas, they have another thing like. How they put the Shakti as beyond Shaktiman is they use all our philosophy of Rasa Tattva to prove how Shakti is bigger than one of them. He told about Lalita. Lalita Sahasranam, for them Lalita is the highest, beyond even Vishnu. He was trying to explain, he was quoting Rasa Tattva scriptures.
So in other words, when Mayavadis come from Bengal, then they end up as... Yeah. Yes.
When in India people worship to Ishvara with this motivation, because they consider that it's a middle state before appearing, will they get any Advaita Supriti, or because of offensive attitude it will destroy them?
Will they get any Advaita Supriti? Not really, because they're not accepting. Agyata Sukriti means it's in line with the absolute truth. So it's coming. It's in contact. Agyata Sukriti you get from bona fide devotees, like that. Other than that, there'll be some piety. One, for their understanding of the Lord and all that, that offensive aspect, then they'll end up as, you know, stones and stuff like that. Because if God's formless, they'll be formless, you know. But it doesn't mean that their study of scriptures or practice of Varnashram or austerities or, you know, their vratas, that they're not going to get some piety for that. Right? But the problem is, you know, that'll be enjoyed, I guess, after being a rock or something. Does that make sense? A rock, not the rock, right?
Because we discussed that Srila Prabhupada said if in India a person worship to Kali, and he accidentally will worship to Shri Krishna, he will get some Agyata Sukriti. In this case, it will be only if he will not have this offensive attitude.
Basically, but the thing is it depends how broad you're taking Agyata Sukriti. Because it means it moves them forward in that, but how often are they doing? Right? So the point is it gets serious when the Agyata Sukriti is coming from the Parampara. But generally, that's when there's enough, you know, like that. They're willing to hear and all these kind of things. But even you see, it's like you have life members. How many of them are serious about Krishna consciousness? Right? It's just a matter of association. Those who have more association, they take it more seriously. Those who are not, don't. But the point is piety is in line with doing activities that are favorable to bhakti. So the point is that kind of punya then will always be an advantage. Does that make sense? But we just have to see it's a natural development. So not that, oh, it either completely is or it absolutely isn't. You know, even if it is, how much is it? They're accepting, they're worshiping the Lord, but not accepting Him as a person. So that they've done the worship and that part's okay, but they haven't accepted Him as a person, that's not okay. You know, it's not that they'll get the same benefit, but they're getting something. Does that make sense?
Who will be in better position? Monotheist in Christianity. And
but didn't we discuss this one?
Yes, we discussed. I want to understand more clearly. Monotheist in Christianity, for example, or a person who offends Krishna by following my Vada philosophy, but who worships Krishna.
I'm just laughing, thinking where we're going to take it from here.
The next one's going to be.
Yeah, what the next one level will be. You know, find it more and more. You know, the point is what is the point that's being made? The Western Christian, he accepts God, but only as part of his karma. And only as much as God fits into that, then it works. Right? And is God a person? Let's say, talk about him as a person, so what does he look like? He has no form. So then, technically, what's the difference? They're just not as much committed to that. They're quite comfortable with that. You know, according to Mayavada, it's the second level. Right? So, the point is, the Mayavada, he's confident in practicing that, but he knows about that first level. Right? Thing is the Mayavada, if he becomes convinced of Krishna consciousness, then the whole religious process is very, very solid, like we see with Vaishnav Das. He could very easily live and comfortably live there and practice Krishna consciousness. While someone coming from that Christian background, they may or may not find it so easy, the religion. You understand? Because they're following more things. There's more things in place. Because it's not that. Because we're looking at it, well, he's an impersonalist, and the Christian is a you know, a full, you know, Vaishnav theist. But they're not. They're also impersonalists. Because they've only accepted God in as much as whatever karma that they're willing to get from that, what they're going to enjoy. But even if they're very nicely fixed in their faith, but it's still, they're going to heaven. Where's heaven? Is heaven in the transcendental realm? No, it's just up there in the clouds somewhere, right? Does that make sense? If we have a kind of a cartoon, right? And there's some clouds, and there's a gate, and there's a guy with a big beard there and a halo standing there, and some people walking along to, you know, like that, we're cool with it. You understand? Because it's not, they're not dealing in the transcendental platform. The Brahmavadis at least know about the transcendental position, though they don't understand it properly. They're accepting the Shastra, they're accepting this, while the Krishnas say, you know, Krishna says in Gita, they don't care. So how are they also not? It's just that they're dealing with just a small amount, but as soon as you give them the rest of it, they'll be offensive against that also. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that there is a progression that's there, so we shouldn't keep going, all, you know what I'm saying? Otherwise, we can keep doing that and taking it how far, you know. Does that make sense? You know, what's better is that, you know, we're there and the aliens have caught us, and then they say that, you know, we're either going to blow up Earth or you're going to eat this chapati on a codicil, you know, like that, you know. Or, you know, is it that, you know, you can just keep going, you know. I mean, people spend hours doing that, you know. It's like when there's nothing better to do in the car, they do that stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So catch the principle that's there, is that by accepting the Vedic culture, by following that, they're in a better position. Because all you have to do now is introduce the correct philosophy, and they're already situated. But the other, you introduce the correct philosophy, you can still be burnt at the stake. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just not that strong a point. I mean, it's just like, is Varnashram well understood, accepted, and just naturally practiced within our society? Why not? Because of these Abrahamic background. Literally. But those from the Vedic background, they have no problem following it. Right? They'll do all the necessary cultural things, though they have a tendency is that, oh yes, you know, Lord Chaitanya rejected Varnashram as external, and so they reject it. And then they have fun playing with it. Okay, well, you know, there's this girl from this really rich family, and we'll marry him to this guy from the poor family, because we're beyond, you know, all this kind of stuff. We don't make any distinction. And they're very proud of that. So why would you do that? Because the Veda says if they have an equal nature. So if they have equal nature, it'll be a great marriage. But if they don't have equal marriage, just because you say everything's equal, since when are we in authority? Since when is our word satya sankalpa?
Since the movie.
Since the movie. Yeah, of course. It's always awesome. You know, yeah, Hindu boy, Muslim girl. But,
the millionaire from there.
Oh, yeah. Then it got into Muslim boy, Hindu girl. But and the point is that a girl has to be a Brahmin.
Otherwise, there's no point.
Yeah, no point. It's just to, you know, he's in the slum, she's in the slum, they get together, you know, then, you know, nobody cares, you know, just sitting there, hey, you want to get married? Yeah, why not? You know, then, you know, yeah, it's not going to work. It has to be, you know, the universe is trying to keep them apart, but true love is the real.
No.
Yeah, you have to. Otherwise, then. Listen.
I got a little misty there, Maharaj.
Huh? Yeah, it's great.
Maharaj, how did Shukdev Goswami get the mercy of Vyasadeva? Of course, by listening to Bhagavatam, but he was.
So, why wouldn't he get the mercy of Vyasadeva?
How did he get? Because he was.
Means how you want to know if it was he did it online, you know, what company delivered it and all that, and you want to know if Amazon delivered it or like that, because if UPS or someone else did, then it's not quite as. Krishna came, spoke to him. He heard his from his father and all that. So then, what's the? You hear Bhagavatam, why you wouldn't get the mercy?
Because he was offensive, like, you know, the idea.
Offensive?
Like,
he wasn't a Mayavadi. He was a Brahmavadi. He wasn't offensive. He only knew Brahman. So Krishna is also Brahman. You know, so Krishna is the supreme Brahman, and he's Brahman. Everything else is Brahman.
Okay.
He doesn't say it's illusion. It's just that it's all Brahman. It's a difference.
Yeah.
So there's a difference between the Brahmavadis and Mayavadis.
Okay.
No, Mayavadis like to call themselves Brahmavadis, but they're not. They're Mayavadis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Moved on from that, the sentimental moments. Okay, so that's their essential point, is that it means there's only Brahman, everything else is illusion. And so we're in this conditioned state because of that illusion of not understanding everything's Brahman. Understanding everything's Brahman, we will come back to that point of being Brahman. Right? So that's Advaitavad, monism, or pantheism. Because the religious process that means the philosophy, the religion, like that, they'll follow. Advaitavad has two types, Mayavadi and Vivartavad. That's interesting. This is, looks like it'll be, I think we'll probably stop because otherwise.
No, yeah.
Interesting.
More interesting. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda.